from Santa Barbara, California. The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes. Talk radio for the new age. Interviews with well-established professionals in the fields of New Age philosophy, holistic healthcare, energy healing, psychic phenomena, and extraterrestrial encounters. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes, The Timeless Voyager.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio. And my guest today is Carol Gurney. She is an animal communicator, and I was very happy to have met her at the expo in Los Angeles a while back. And it's interesting because I never thought much about animal communication. As a matter of fact, it seemed almost silly to me when I first heard about it. However, when we began talking about telepathy, I began to see that there was certainly a lot to this telepathic communication, the importance of it, the fact that it is a natural language. And after I heard her speak about animal communication, I was very, very happy that I had met her. So welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Bruce.
And for our listeners, let's start out with this. What is an animal communicator?
An animal communicator is someone who has basically studied the language of animals. And that means it's just a different language. It's like learning Spanish or French, Italian. And the skill that it really requires is to learn how to still the mind and be quiet and listen.
Now, this is exactly why, after I had listened to you, I realized how important this was, in that while you are using this telepathic communication to talk to animals, certainly we hear throughout this quote-unquote awakening of consciousness that the telepathic communication is the only real communication.
It is, and it's a communication that can be held between anyone. For instance, we can telepathically communicate with people, and we do this in the workshop so that we can experience what it's like to actually listen to another person without the use of words. When we get a handle on that, when we practice, then we transfer it to animals. Because with the animals, we will doubt ourselves a lot because it's a language that we can't hear. It's silent. And when you practice it with human beings, it gives you the confidence to go on and really believe that you're doing it.
All right. Now, why would a person want to communicate telepathically with animals?
Basically, to find out the truth of what's going on. A lot of times when we leave interpretation solely up to our five senses, observing the physical body, we're guessing a lot. There are times when their animals are in serious danger. They have tremendous emotional upsets, tremendous odd behavior, and we need to ask them directly what is going on.
Now, out here, I'm sorry to interrupt, but out here in California, certainly we tend to be the people that everyone pokes fun at. Mm-hmm. And so this sounds so California. I'm sure that all the people around the United States and parts of Canada are probably saying, oh my God, animal telepathy, just what we need. But it has been, for example, there is a study that recently came out having to do with earthquakes, predicting earthquakes. And the gentleman who did the study, I don't remember his name at this moment, concluded that by watching animal behavior, he was able to predict earthquakes. And as a matter of fact, he was awarded a large grant because he saw that there was a connection between missing animals, animals that had run away for the afternoon or for a week, and the upcoming event, this most recent large earthquake that occurred in San Francisco. So I can see that there would be a definite pragmatic reason for being able to communicate with animals, even if it's just on the level of finding out when there might be a natural disaster occurring.
Absolutely. That would be very helpful. But to learn it as a just general language, as a second language, so that you really understand who your animal is and develop a closer relationship. Why it comes in handy is because animals are so oftentimes misunderstood or misjudged. when we don't find out what's going on with them. And I'll give you an example of how this can be misinterpreted and how it can be so helpful to understand telepathy with animals.
All right, before you do that, I want to let those of you who may have just tuned in know that this is Bruce Stephen Holmes. It is Timeless Voyager Radio. And today, joining us today, is Carol Gurney. She is an animal communicator. So continue.
Okay. I was called in on a case. They had reached rock bottom. They didn't know what else to do. It was a German Shepherd who was beginning to snap at their owners. But strangely, when they would cook in the kitchen, the animal would run down the hall and hug the toilet bowl. It would also, if you left any paper products, magazines, newspapers, whatever, on the coffee table, the animal would devour the paper products, not simply chew it up and spit it out, but simply down the hatch all the way. And they had sent the dog out to be trained. Trainers really didn't understand what was going on with the animal. They thought maybe the dog was becoming vicious, and perhaps they could consider putting the animal down.
Now, this was all on the level of thought now, wasn't it? This is how the human beings were reacting to the animal. Basically, they were projecting their own thoughts into what the problem was with the animal. So the point here is that no one ever asked the animal what the problem was.
No, everybody was guessing.
Okay.
No one was asking directly the animal, what is going on? Why are you biting? Why are you eating paper products? How do you feel? What's going on? So I went over to their house, and the first thing that the German Shepherd told me was, don't touch me.
Okay, now, before you say that, let's stop for 1 second.
Okay.
Let's take a moment and explain to people that you do put yourself in a particular place, mm-hmm. right? Why don't we just...
In order to do that, in order to have the ability... I went and I was very quiet mentally. So when I find out what the problem is, I take lots of deep breaths to get myself centered, to get myself calm, and not distracted by anybody.
So you're not making up some scenario here. And as a matter of fact, we're going to offer a lot of very interesting mm-hmm. documentation to our listeners. You take a moment, you put yourself in a very quiet state, mm-hmm. and you begin to listen, don't you?
Because if I don't, if I have a lot of mental chatter going on in my head, there is no way I can listen to another being. I must be quiet, so to speak, upstairs in my head in order to receive the language of animals.
All right, so we'll get back to this
particular
case.
So I do a lot of preparation, and that's necessary in order to have this skill. So when I prepared, I asked the animal, I said to myself mentally, what is happening to you when they cook in the kitchen? And I showed the animal a picture of the woman in the kitchen cooking.
All right, so this somehow, something was, I don't know if you'd said this a minute ago, I may have missed it. Basically, there was a trigger going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying? When they cooked in the kitchen, something happened with
the animal? Well, then I asked why, yes, because when they were in the kitchen, that's when the dog would take off down the hall.
Right.
And
so they
the
had
toilet
at least
bowl.
They had at least observed
yes.
that there was a connection.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely. So the animal then proceeded to tell me, my stomach feels so sick. I feel so sick and I feel so hot. My stomach feels hot, like it's burning. Therefore, the animal would run down the hall and hug the toilet bowl. Hugging the toilet bowl is because it's cool, it's damp, and it would put out the burning sensation in the dog's stomach. Therefore, the dog was taking care of itself. It was knowing how to help itself temporarily.
Hmm.
So from there, I knew that something was wrong with this animal physically, and they had to really get the animal to the care of a vet to find out what was off. We then proceeded, I got the smell of, specifically from the dog, that the meat, there was the smell of the meat that particularly started turning the stomach. And so we muscle tested with the animal to find out if there was something in the food. And sure enough, the meat was upsetting the stomach. So I just told them, temporarily, just feed your animal the vegetables. There's something about the meat, and take your dog to a vet. The dog was simply snapping at them, number one, as a communication to them to say, help me, I hurt so bad that you can't touch me. That's how deep the pain is. They took it to the vet. The vet said the liver was so dysfunctional. There was so much bile in the stomach that it was eating the stomach lining. Therefore, all of the heat, the inflammation, the nausea that the animal was feeling. What was incredible is the intelligence of this being, of this animal, to take care of itself. Number one, to signal to the person in a way that it only knew how when the people were not telepathically aware or in tune. That was by the biting to say, help me, I hurt. Again, running down the hall, hugging the toilet bowl. Again, the animal intelligently trying to take care of itself to put the fire out that it felt in the stomach. Again, another thing about eating the paper products. The paper products were absorbing the bile in the stomach. So this is where, when we don't ask the animal directly, my gosh, we were almost in a situation where these people were seriously considered putting this animal to sleep when it was truly a physical ailment that was going on.
Now, what's interesting about the story then is that we as human beings tend to think of ourselves as being intelligent and everything else in nature as being we can't even use the word stupid, actually non-existent. They're just these things that walk around and don't know anything. Mm-hmm. What you're indicating to us is that once again, and certainly on Timeless Voyager Radio, we're always talking about the idea of unity, of becoming unified mm-hmm. with nature. And yet everyone's tendency is to think, well, that thing doesn't think, or this doesn't know anything, or what does that know? What does this know? Here you're telling us that in actuality, we're the ones who don't know how to communicate. We've made up a language that animals don't know, and yet I guess all animals are using this one telepathic communication device.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. They're starving for us to really learn their language. And basically, we have that theory about ourselves that animals are basically physical beings for our entertainment. A lot of us think that way. And what I've come to realize is that they're not. They're beings who are physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional. And we look upon them as lesser beings because if we don't accept ourselves as whole beings, if we can't accept our own spirituality, our own emotions and feelings, which a lot of us have difficulty doing, how can then we possibly recognize an animal as having feelings, as being spiritual? But in reality, what they teach me every day is that they are. They are true communicators with this universal language. They are in the moment, more so than we are. They understand and live unconditional love. We don't. This is the greatest gift that they can give us, is they teach us all the time. We just need to be open to it.
Now, it's interesting, certainly, most importantly, people who have pets, of course, will claim to begin to feel or know what the pet needs or demands, and at the same time, those same people will tend to generally discourage anyone from this type of communication. What I'm learning here, and I'm hoping that the listeners are learning, is that you have somehow come across something that I think a lot of people never even thought of. I mean, people are trying to communicate telepathically with extraterrestrials, but here is our own they're not extraterrestrials, but here's our own terrestrial kingdom. There are millions of different animals and birds and fish and insects out there, I guess you're saying, that can be communicated with.
Absolutely. We're born with this language. It's as natural to us as breathing is. If you listen to children, they'll tell you, mommy, what the bird told me, mommy, what the dog told me. And we hush that. We tend to repress that in our children because we think, oh my God, what are the neighbors going to think? They're going to think our children are crazy. It's because we've put so much emphasis on our intellect, and anything other than that is really scary to us. And the more we become as human beings comfortable with ourselves, are comfortable with our own emotions, and really comfortable with being quiet. So many of us are so action-oriented, stimulating the intellect all the time, that it's almost scary sometimes to be quiet. We don't know what to do with that quiet space. So then how could we possibly get quiet enough to listen to another being?
My guest today, Carol Gurney. This is Timeless Voyager Radio. You have said that we, I guess, are threatened by the fact that animals communicate and have feelings, and I guess somehow have trouble accepting this.
I think it's scary because it's different, and anything, any change, and so forth. We as human beings sometimes handle change really hard. It threatens us. We begin to feel lost, etc. And so the world of animal communication is different and therefore sometimes a little bit threatening. But I was in that space as well, too. It scared me when I first started.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about this. How did this happen to you? I mean, you didn't start out as an animal communicator.
I sure didn't. And I was really, really blocked. But strangely enough, my veterinarian got me into animal communication, believe it or not. I had a cat that was acting really strange. And he said, you know, Carol, I can't find anything physically wrong with this cat. And he said, there are people out there that communicate with animals. And he said, I really suggest you seek one out and find out what's going on. Is there an emotional upset that the cat is responding to? And that's basically how I got introduced to it. I then proceeded to take a workshop for myself and felt extremely uncomfortable. I was extremely mental, very, very intellect-oriented person. And at the workshop, I wasn't getting anything because I was trying so hard. I was pushing so much to get something. And you can't. You need to relax. You have to create the space in order to receive information. And at the end of the workshop, after several hours of trying, I finally received a message from a cat. But even after that, it took me 2 years. I was really scared to do it on my own because I thought, you know, how will I know if I'm right? How will I know if I'm not projecting, if these aren't my own thoughts? And the only thing that I can offer to people is it's practice. It's like anything. You can't, I took the workshop and there's no way I could have gone out and spoke fluently with the animals. It takes practice and you will begin to get messages and feedback that is so concrete and so specific that there's no way you could have pulled it out of the sky. And that's what gives you the courage and the confidence to go on and to know that what you're really doing is real. That's what's nice about it. And the other thing that will validate you is the results. Because when you get the message from the animal and you can help that person understand why the animal is acting a certain way, it opens the door. The animal gets relieved to say, oh my God, thank God, someone listened to me. Now I can get back into a harmonious relationship with my person. And the relationship can change.
So now you've told me an interesting story about a pig.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason I would think you should relate this is because it's a good example of how what you're doing can be validated.
Yeah, absolutely. I was on another radio show, and this person wanted to test me prior to the show, and she asked me if I would talk to her 700-pound pig called Popcorn, which I did. And the first thing Popcorn said to me was that he missed her voice and he missed her telling him stories. And the other thing he said, she wanted to know whether, did he like his where he was at this particular farm? And he said it was pretty boring. The only thing that excited him throughout the day were the chickens. And of course, his mealtime. And and the other thing that he missed was he missed her touching him. He said, she doesn't touch me anymore, and I really miss that.
Now this is all information that Popcorn gave to you. She was not there.
She was not there. I do a lot of my consultations long distance.
All right. So the point was you took down notes. Mm-hmm. All right, and then you presented them to her.
I presented them back to the person.
Now, of course, she was really shocked, wasn't she?
She was shocked because she said, this is unreal, because she said she used to go and see Popcorn. The first thing she would do was sing him stories. This is when he was small. She would sing to him by guitar and sing him stories. And there's her voice. He missed her voice. The other thing that she said is it's uncanny because the people that have Popcorn on the farm say that he's the only pig that allows chickens to lay with him. They walk on his back. They sleep with him. They cuddle with him. They have never seen anything like this with a pig. And the other thing is, she had thoughts. She used to touch him and rub him and give him a massage all the time. But because he got so big, she started becoming a little frightened. Like, could she possibly get hurt because of his size? And she said, this validates it, that what he misses that, and it will be okay for me now to go and touch him again. Right after the show, she had time and she wanted to go out and really start touching him again because he missed that.
So here again, what had happened was that we humans, again, because we're not communicating with the animals, we make up our own little scenarios, and then we think they're real and we live by them. Mm-hmm. And we completely forget that the animal really has intelligence, that it obviously can live a very successful life without us, and yet we treat them like they are nothing. What is your feeling about how we treat animals right now? And certainly America, I don't know about other countries, but we seem to be definitely one of the cruelest, and I'm using the word cruel, meaning the way that we treat animals. If an animal, for example, is not a pet, the animal must be taken off the street. We have very, very strange ideas about where animals belong and how they need to be fixed, how they need to not procreate. What are your feelings about that? Because you must have strong feelings having communicated with them.
To their benefit, and I have talked to many of them, and I've talked to a lot of other animal communicators, is one of the best things we can do for them is to neuter them. And a lot of the times the responses that we get from them is that they actually feel better not being at the impulses of the hormones all the time. And we can certainly help them by doing that, and I think that's one of our responsibilities. But again, we treat animals also sometimes the way we treat ourselves. And so until we as human beings can really respect, appreciate who we are, begin to really nurture and love ourselves, we're going to have a tough time doing that with the animals. And I'm hoping that each of us will take that responsibility to look upon ourselves in loving ways so that that can be, we can bridge that gap with the animals so that we no longer look at them as beneath us, our possessions, our pets. They really aren't. They're just our friends, and they're our teachers. They are in our lives to really show us who we are. And they help us every day by showing to us, reflecting to us, our shortcomings, things about ourselves that need to be nurtured, emotions that are imbalanced and feelings that we get scared of. They reflect, like children reflect to us all the time. But what I do see on the positive side is I see people opening up more and more, taking more responsibility for themselves, therefore taking responsibility for the animals, and wanting to learn this language. That's what I'm excited about. I see it happening over and over, workshops expanding, people beginning to talk to each other about it. People who have taken my training program, actually helping people to do some of the exercises and to get quiet. It's expanding more and more. So I would say that things are changing.
Let's talk a little bit about your program. People come to you and say, yes, I'd like to learn. Now, you've said before that you personally took 2 years practicing. So a person just shouldn't think that they're going to walk in and learn 10 or 12 words and be able to communicate like we would if we were to run off to a foreign country with a little dictionary.
No, but you know, you can get some of the essentials. At the workshop, it's an all-day experience, and we do exercises, and we build on the exercises to really learn how to quiet ourselves so that we can receive telepathic communication, not only from the animals, but from each other. And during the day, they actually get to experience what it's like to receive the communication. And when somebody gets something, I'll ask them, how did you get that? And they'll say, it was just, I saw a picture, or I heard words.
So you use a visualization technique.
I don't specifically. There are lots of different techniques to get people started. There is no right or wrong way, or there is no you have to do it this way at all. People just offer techniques that they have utilized to help people become familiar with the language, and then it's up to them to develop their own style, whatever fits their comfort.
So you yourself don't offer any particular tools?
I do. I will share with them. There are creative visualization techniques, which means if you were to ask a dog, what did it like to eat? What was its favorite meal? You would then visualize its bowl in front of them empty. And then you would simply wait to see what the bowl got filled up with. What did you see? Broccoli, chicken, rice?
So now the point of this whole thing is that's getting difficult because you may spend a lot of time creating.
Well, I don't particularly use that method for myself because coming from a real intellectual background, I don't like it because I'm in my head a lot. I'm worried about, do I have the right size bowl? Is it the right color? I can't be spontaneous. That doesn't allow me to get out of my head. The other method would be Gestalt, and a lot of psychotherapists use this, where what you can do is if you're having a problem, say, for instance, with your mother, they will ask you, visualize your mother, talk to her, tell her your feelings, and once you've done that, they'll ask you to get up out of your chair and move over and actually sit where your imaginary mother was and now talk to you from your mother's point of view. And it's amazing. You really begin to see and understand the other person's point of view. You can do that with animals. If you want to talk to that particular animal, ask them a question mentally, then pretend like you're getting up and becoming that animal, and then answer yourself. It's quite a powerful technique. What the technique that I use would be communicating from the heart.
We're talking about feelings here now.
Feelings. I think why I do that, I didn't know why I did that. Somebody asked me when they said, please teach this. I basically had to break down the steps of how I did this. And the first important thing is the breathing. The breathing gets you to the space. It gets you connected to yourself, the space that's peaceful, that's allowing, and that's quiet. And that's where you want to communicate from.
So you'll use some type of breathing technique.
Just breathing generally. Just breathing deeply until you begin to feel yourself relax, get quiet. You feel a sense of nothingness. Nothing's happening. It's very peaceful.
So you like to get a person needs to get centered and
relaxed.
Get quiet.
And quiet and relaxed. And then the next step is to really feel yourself in your heart, in that part of your body, in your chest. Sink down there, focus your attention there, and from there, ask a question like, how are you? Or are you willing to talk with me? Formulate that question in your heart and then let it go. Imagine that there could be maybe a beam of light going from your heart to the animal. Place it on the animal and let go. And then just simply wait and see what you get back from your heart. It might be a feeling of, I feel fine, or hello. It's just this, you can receive it by a feeling, you can receive it by a picture, or a concept. Animals communicate in concepts. They communicate very, very fast, and then you put your words to best describe what the animal just sent you.
Now, of course, the animal may not want to communicate at that moment.
Right. And if they don't, if you get a no, then just say, fine, thank you, and move on to another animal.
So the important point here is that we also have to realize that animals have moments when they want to be quiet and left alone.
Absolutely. And just like us.
We as human beings tend to feel like we're manipulating. We want, you know, something to happen at that moment. As a matter of fact, we're always giving out commands.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't forgive. We don't, you know, the animals are forgiving us. We never forgive them, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's very, very important.
This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio. Today, my guest is Carol Gurney. She is an animal communicator, and we're talking about not just communicating with animals. Certainly, that's the basic premise here. But we are also talking about the fact that there is a telepathic communication that many of us, I guess, have lost at this point and need to regain. She has some very interesting techniques in her workshops for helping people remember how to be telepathic. We're going to take a break for a moment, and then we'll be right back. And I think we're going to talk more about the idea of feelings versus words, especially when a person is trying to discipline or teach the animal something. We'll be right back after these few messages.
The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes will return after these messages. The Timeless Voyager with Bruce Stephen Holmes.
On the show today, Carol Gurney, she is an animal communicator, and we're talking about telepathically speaking to animals. Carol, I left a segue here. We're going to talk about The difference between giving out a feeling that may be misunderstood, words may not be connected with the feeling when we're talking to animals. You said you had an example.
I do. When I first started, this was one of my first cases that I had, a woman was having difficulty training her animal. She called and she said, "Carol, my dog can't learn the simplest of commands, and I'm worried that I bought a stupid animal. What do I do?"
Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm worried that I bought a stupid animal.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the animal saying, "God, I hope I bought a stupid master."
So then I asked, I said, okay, with the animal, I asked him, I said, "What happens to you when she gives you a command?" And this was so strange, the response to me. I didn't understand it at all. But I got a picture of another dog that flashes in front of his face. That's all I got. In addition, he then showed me he tries to walk to her, and he walks with a wiggle because he's so dizzy from what he just saw.
So in other words, something that she's thinking, or no, something that she's sending out in her feelings is making the dog feel uncomfortable.
Feel uncomfortable. Plus, he sees this picture of another dog.
Right.
So I didn't understand it, and that's why you can't analyze. You just get the information, and then you relay it to the person. So I asked her, I said, "By any chance, when you give your dog a command, do you see a picture? Do you visualize another animal?" And she said, "My God, I can't believe you're asking me this, but yes, I do. My dog that just died, he looks exactly like this dog." This was the first demonstration to me how powerful our feelings are. For instance, what was happening there? She was doing two things, but she thought she was only doing one thing. She was giving a command verbally, but she was feeling the death of her other animal. Two things happening simultaneously, and what got to the animal was not the words, not the command, but the feeling. He got the picture of the other animal.
So she was actually remorseful over the death of another animal, and he was picking up all of this remorse, this sorrow from a death, and it was definitely...
He was basically picking up that every time she looked at him, she thought of the other animal and felt the other animal. So that's what constantly kept getting in the way, was this picture of this other animal. Therefore, here's why telepathic communication is so important for us to learn as a second language, is the animal was getting misjudged there as being stupid. And the animal wasn't stupid at all. It was simply responding to what she was putting out. But she, as a person, didn't even realize what she was doing in reality. She thought she was only doing one thing, where she was really feeling another.
Now, we have a very interesting situation here then. I'm going to expound upon this. We have human beings who basically feel nothing telepathically. So they rely on the words.
Mm-hmm.
We have animals who don't know the words and pick up everything telepathically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I find is interesting is that we as humans would probably be better off learning this telepathic communication, because it would add to our abilities then.
Absolutely, and plus it would simplify things.
Meanwhile, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, animals do learn words and responses. They mm-hmm. learn things from us. So for some strange reason, I'm beginning to feel these animals are a lot smarter than we are. Because they know when you say heal, they know when you say come here, they know their name, they know, mm-hmm. but we don't know anything.
Right. They have tried their darndest to learn our language, but we haven't with theirs. Absolutely. So, and their language is easy.
And there's no meeting point then. We're not meeting them at all. We're not even meeting them halfway. We're not meeting them at all. We're commanding that they learn what we know.
Absolutely.
And we are not in any way even trying or possibly suggesting that there might be some intelligence there.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes when people get things and they say, "Well, oh yeah, I know what my animal tells me," and so forth, part of them, it is true, the animal is getting in there, but the person thinks it's their intellect, that they're being so smart about what their dog, they know them, etc. But it's really the dog getting through to them on some level telepathically, but they have a hard time validating that it could possibly be telepathic communication.
Now, of course, the problem here is that we are giving them telepathic information without our knowledge. This is exactly what this woman was doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now we are giving out to the animals information, and that's why they react the way they do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. They will respond. If you're doing two things, they're going to respond to your feeling, not your words.
Now, let's just talk for a moment about this then. You say that with our animal friends, and that's a nice way, we mm-hmm. refer to them as friends, where we should put them and at least give them parity with us at this point. Mm-hmm. We should give them information. We should impart information. So you can't, now I'm going to make up something. Let's say you're going to get your dog or your cat or whatever it is neutered. Mm-hmm. All right. So you know what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. All right. So obviously, if you know what you're going to do, they know what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. All right. But we act like they don't know.
Exactly.
So then we lie to them. Is that right? We say, okay, we're going to go for a little ride in the car.
Mm-hmm. And right this there.
This is very bad now, isn't it?
Well, right. Because what you're doing is you're setting up distrust there.
Right.
Because you're telling them that they're going, oh, you were just going to go for a little ride. And yet they know because we've thought that. We've already sent that out to them where they're truly going. So then they look at us and they're wondering, why are we not telling them the truth?
In other words, why would a person even do that?
Right.
And of course, the point here is they don't know. I guess they're giving us too much credit at that point. They still think we're communicating with them because after all, they are receiving information. So the question that's going to come up then is, why would an intelligent being like you tell me a lie?
Right.
Right. And mm-hmm. so at this point, the problem that comes up then is, what happens after? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have animals that change dramatically after neutering. I've heard this many times. This is probably a good reason why that would happen, isn't it? Because it has nothing to do with the surgery now, does it?
Could be. There could be lots of different elements connected with that, and it really depends on the situation. Yeah, if the person did not explain it, if they're telling them one thing but they're doing another, that becomes very confusing. And what begins to happen with that animal after a while is the animal will shut down. The animal will begin to say, boy, I get mixed messages. Just if you put something out, but on a subconscious level, your message is different. Your animal becomes very, very confused about that and begins to either act out strange behavior. Or might begin to withdraw because it's losing that sense of connection with you. So it's real important to give animals information. Tell them where they're going. Tell them when you're going on vacation. How long are you going to be gone?
And take the time. Take the time.
Just like, I mean, we as human beings hunger for information, even in the workforce. When you don't know something from your boss, you know something's going on, but you don't have the information. You sit there and you worry.
Right.
You worry about what's going on. You second guess. And then all of a sudden, when your boss tells you what's going on, you put all of this energy out in this worry, and you didn't have to at all. But it's the communication. We don't like to be left in the dark.
Now, of course, this applies to everything. This applies to fish in a bowl,
birds in a cage.
This applies to everything.
Every animal, yeah. No matter how big or small, it doesn't matter.
All of them. So it doesn't matter how big or small they are?
No. Mm-mm.
Or whether we like them or not, they know what we're thinking.
Yeah.
I mean, not thinking, they know what we're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So this is why a dog will attack someone when they're talking to them nicely. Or a horse, the best example of all is people who have fear of riding a horse. I mean, they're constantly going to be thrown. I don't care how gentle the horse is, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if you're putting that out, that's what you're going to be getting back. If you're putting out tremendous fear, the animal's going to respond, well, maybe there is something to fear here. Maybe
so
I need to get this person off of my
you're
back.
You're actually scaring the animal through your fear.
Yes. Yes. And what you need to do is take that emotion off or absolutely tell the animal, gosh, right now I feel a little scared. And that's just my stuff. It has nothing to do with you. But I'm just a little scared of you. And if you approach it and admit it, it will. You'll take the charge off of it.
My guest today, Carol Gurney, we're talking about animal communication, and it's really amazing what we're learning here. Everyone has the ability then to communicate, don't they?
Everybody. There is no difference between myself or anybody who's listening today. The only difference is that I've decided to do it professionally. So there is no difference. It's just a matter of practice.
We started a little while ago talking a little bit about the ways that you set up the steps of learning. We talked about breathing, being centered, and then allowing yourself to listen and speak from your heart. These are easy things to say, mm-hmm. But this is not always easy stuff to do.
It isn't. It's like tennis lesson. I mean, I have some bad habits when it comes to tennis. And when the instructor gives me the correct way of moving my arm, it doesn't come naturally.
Right, it doesn't mean that your arm's going to move correctly now that you heard it for the first time or the tenth time.
Yeah, it means that I have to allow myself to be relaxed enough to try a different way. You know, we get so cemented in the familiar, and what is unfamiliar to us, we almost get a little bit frightened by it. So it takes perseverance, the practice, and supporting each other. There are people that have taken this animal communication workshop, a trainer in Riverside. The people have actually gotten together one Sunday per month for 3 months and have practiced together. They have supported each other. They then had me come back to do an advanced workshop. They were sensational. They are moving along so fast because they have one another to support each other with. And I think it's absolutely fantastic that they did this.
So the important point here is there are probably two points. I guess the first point is that we should not have expectations as to how great or good we're going to be at communicating.
Absolutely. Just because allow it to unfold.
Because there'll be better tennis players and lesser tennis players. That shouldn't stop you from playing tennis.
No, absolutely not.
All right. And so there will be great communicators and lesser communicators, but that's okay, isn't it? Just as long as we're communicating.
Absolutely. And to know that each one of us will perhaps communicate in a different way. We will each have our own style, and we'll each have our own little niche. I'm different than some of the other animal communicators, and the animals actually taught me what my role would be as an animal communicator and how I could best help people understand who animals truly are. So we just have to trust that.
Now, if we're speaking telepathically, there's going to be different ways of receiving too, aren't there? Some people will hear voices.
Yeah.
Some people will see pictures. Yeah. Some people will just have
a knowingness. It's just like, there it is. Right. There it is. I got it. It's an impulse. And that's absolutely
fine. So each one of us has to find out what our way is too.
Absolutely. And we talk about that at the workshop, so they actually are understanding how they're getting it. And they'll get such concrete information that they'll go, oh my gosh, I can't believe this, I'm doing this. But you know what happens? The next second, they'll go, no, not really. They'll forget how right on they were. And that's why the support system and why the practice is essential, because our conscious mind gets in there and wants to doubt us all the time. Because it's the part of ourselves it's like a muscle. Our conscious mind's like a muscle that we use every day. Our telepathic, our intuitive is not. It's a weak muscle. So that other muscle gets in and goes, get out of the way. It's afraid of losing control. So it's actually, you have to exercise that muscle to become confident enough.
Now, you have another example. You were talking about the raincoat situation.
Yes. There was a dog. I was called as an emergency, and the woman told me that this dog had eaten a raincoat 4 months ago. It was operated on. They removed it, and the dog all of a sudden was showing signs of being sick again. It was passing blood. What was going on? It was 10:30 at night. Could I help them? Could I tell them whether the dog had eaten anything? I spoke with the animal, and the dog said, no, it hadn't. But it could share its feelings with me. And the dog told me, I feel so sick. My stomach is hot. It almost felt like there was a tremendous amount of acid in the stomach, like it was burning. And obviously the dog, something was wrong. I don't diagnose. I simply interpret what the animal is telling me. But on an emotional level, what I got from the animal was there was a tremendous upset. And the upset was the animal felt that it was trying to be so many things to all of its people. It was a large family. And it felt like it wasn't pleasing anybody. And so therefore, it was suffering from a sense of tremendous failure, that it wasn't good enough. And it's really interesting because during that conversation, the person said to me, my God, it sounds like you're talking about me. I'm like that with my family. I'm always doing so much, and I have a hard time saying no. She never feels quite good about doing anything. Similar emotional pattern that the dog was having. What was happening there is the animal, because of that emotional feeling and feeling so uncomfortable having that feeling, it was beginning to eat and stuff and repress its feeling. Similar to people who will eat when they get nervous because there are feelings coming up and they don't want to feel them. So then what you do is you put something in your mouth to suppress it, stuff it down again.
This is a dog developing an eating disorder.
Absolutely.
But it's not privy to all the food that the rest of us have, so it's just eating anything it can find.
Eating anything to stop that emotional feeling from coming up.
Does it have to go to OA then?
All right. Here is how you fix this. Here is a person.
Boy, if you can fix the dog, maybe you can help
yeah,
me.
Yeah, here was a person who was wanting some help for the animal, fix the animal. And this is what the animals began to tell me, is that this animal was not going to get fixed unless she was willing to change and look at her emotional pattern that she needed to deal with. All of the feelings that she was having of not feeling good enough with any of her family members, not taking care of herself and not being able to say no to them and carrying that resentment and feeling very uncomfortable about her feelings. The dog was showing her who she was and what aspect of her she needed to deal with. This is going to continue to go on until the person deals with herself. That's why the animal is there for her. And it was interesting because she seemed to be getting it that night. She was right on. And after that, I found out she didn't want to pay me for my services. And she said that I was very general. I didn't give her specific information. And here is a situation where the person became frightened. Frightened because she needed to take responsibility. And this is where I say that the animals try to teach us every day that they are a reflection of us. And here was an animal trying to help its person. And this behavior, what I told the woman is, I wouldn't be so hung up on trying to validate myself and so forth, but I would take a look at the real problem of the animals. Why is this animal eating raincoats? Why is this animal constantly in the garbage? That's the real problem.
Carol, how do you feel when you go to a zoo?
Oh, gosh, it's not the happiest of days. A friend of mine took me to the zoo.
He said, you must have to shut yourself down at that point.
He said, you know, let's have some fun. I'll take you out to the zoo, et cetera. And I got there, and I'll tell you, it was one of the most depressing days I've ever had. And that day I came home, I got very, very sick afterwards. I really wouldn't want to go back. Most of the animals are so unhappy. We go there, and we don't even recognize them for who they are. We go there with a feeling of entertain us. Let's laugh at you. You entertain us. And after we leave, all the animals, it's like they can take a deep breath and go, oh, thank God they're gone.
Right. So would you suggest that anyone who worked at a zoo, any person who would even be close to animals should definitely know this technique?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's so rewarding. Veterinarians have taken my workshop, trainers, and what it has given them, it's just a whole other door has opened up. It's changed the aspect of how they're working and how they view animals.
Your opinion of animals that are definitely entertainers, do they like what they do? How about the San Diego SeaWorld? Do those whales like what they do?
You know, some of them do. It really depends how the
job...
So
we've got show business animals, right? They love
it. It really does. There are some animals that absolutely love to be show horses, dogs that love to be out there. And it's because the way in which the person works with them, it's respectful. It's a companionship, it's done out of love, etc. They love it. So it really depends on the method and the communication that's established between the person and the animal.
How should we look at animals? I know that since you came on the show, since I first met you, I have definitely had a different view of animals. I would hope that that would happen to the listeners too. You do travel around the United States and give seminars and lectures and workshops, don't you?
Yes, I do. Wherever the need is, I go.
And not just the United States. I'm sure you'd be willing to go to Canada.
Right, absolutely.
What would you like to leave us with?
To leave you with to try some of the things we've talked about. Try perhaps sitting in a chair and getting quiet. Getting quiet within yourselves, finding that space, I think, within yourself is very, very important. And then perhaps trying that with an animal and perhaps just take a different look at them and know that, boy, there's a lot of stuff going on inside of there that would be so wonderful for the two of you to exchange. Because there's so much that the animal wants to tell you that for a long time it's had to rely on different ways, by barking, by meowing certain ways to tell you. But there's a whole different other language inside there that's just waiting to be heard. And it really is easy. We just need to have the courage to try it.
And so what people are going to do then is hopefully they'll have the courage to find out that they can change and certainly augment the relationship that they have with any pet, any animal, just by simply sitting down and being quiet.
Oh, and just learning what it's like to be with them. It's an incredible experience. Because we're always doing something with our animal. We're playing with them, walking with them, grooming them, or whatever. But if you just sit down in a chair and just maybe even close your eyes and get quiet and just be with them, just know what is it like to be still with them. It's an incredible experience. And if you think your relationship is wonderful now after you've had that, it grows and grows and grows.
Well, thank you, Carol, for being on The Timeless Voyager. Carol Gurney, animal communicator. Thank you all for tuning in to Timeless Voyager Radio. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards the development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one.